them to finding what you call local degrees of freedom that propagate causal, and that leave a lot of time, of course. I'll always propagate the ones you can focus on the classical states, whatever it is that in your theory. And this is difficult. And it's difficult because, of course, the local energy limit has to depend on the dynamics. And in our case, the dynamics is background independent. So, did you understand this? Basically, what we've done so far is many of us have tried to adapt techniques from other fields of physics, where, of course, they deal with low energy physics all the time, to our problems. So we've tried semi-classical states, coherent states, renormalization group, taking the large spin limit, the spin foam, and we've tried to do this in a background independent context. And of course it's not easy, because background independent dynamics is really a different beast. So because of these difficulties, a lot of the work that we're doing continues to be in the context of a single graph, or a single spin foam complex, which we know is not the thing that could play the main role in the dynamics. So in the last number of years, I basically tried hard to find a J-ring method to calculate low energy limit properties in a background independent complex, for example, drive normalization group adapted some of their lattices. And I'm excited because actually there's something that I think qualifies, at least to a certain extent, that I'll explain exactly what it is. And that is, it comes from quantum information theory, and it's the theory of nonlinear subsystems that I will explain in a few minutes. And by the way, quantum information theory, I found, is a very useful context in which to discuss a lot of our problems, because to a certain extent, and I'll discuss exactly what that extent is, it's background independent in that it mostly refers to information as opposed to a background, geometry, structure, etc. So I'm going to, in this talk, I'm going to define fossil subsystems. And I'm going to apply to a very familiar example, which is the structural platform in Lufthansa graph, and extract this object as a long range propagating degree of freedom. And I'm going to discuss implications for background independence and locality, depending on how much time I have. And these are ideas that were developed with David Cullen, who is in the Institute for Quantum Computing at PI. They have also been very much influenced by all the other quantum information people that we have. So, the very first step we have discussed is basically the evolution, quantum evolution of an open system. And you'll see why that is very relevant. So this is, you'll know this, I've just said in meditation here. So you have a system in an environment, and the total Hilbert space is the tensor product of the system Hilbert space in the environment. And you can always choose an evolution that is unitary for the whole thing. And of course, it will split into the evolution of the environment, the evolution of the system, and the interaction dynamics. You can then concentrate your attention to the system only, and you can take the reduced dynamics on the interface of the system. And that, in general, is a completely positive operator from the interface of the system to. Well, so this means that the front here means that your system might actually change. You might actually come to the environment, you might not be able to extract the original one out. And this formalism allows for that, so the hyperspace of the system can change in time. And this is, of course, you give the initial density matrix for the system, and you take the final one by considering the unitary evolution of the whole and then chasing out the environment. So
it's not a map of the orbit space of the
space. In general it is, so for what I'm doing here it doesn't matter. So the propagating mode, or if you like the semi-classical states or particles or quasi particles that you're looking for, in my definition, is going to be a subsystem of S, something inside here that is considered under the open evolution, that is the box you carry. So, by the way, the inter-evolution here is supposed to be with respect to plant-scale times. In order to have something that you can see has a low energy effect, that better live long enough compared to plant-scale interactions. Of course, many actors will interact with other propagating modes, but that's straightforward if you plot it as far as that. We will see that a notional subsystem, which will define X, is that object. And defining this object, which of course exists in many different forms in all of physics, defining in this way is actually useful for what we do. So, this is very straightforward physics. So, propagating modes have a great deal to do with the interaction between them. Let's see what that is. So, the evolution of the system can be written in this form, where the A is the set of operators. I'm not really going to go into details about what that is. They do have these properties. And they generate the interaction algebra, which is, of course, a subalgebra of all the operations you can do on your Kepler space. And here I'm considering finite dimensional Kepler spaces. So this is just many examples. Now, in general, the interaction algebra, you can split it in this way. So you would have explicit in a bunch of blocks of the reducible representations. And so this would be a D by D dimensional block. That's what this is. And the block will in general appear n times, mu times. And that's what this is. Now, the interaction algebra is a subalgebra of the full algebra. So, there will in general be, well, there will be an interaction committed, which is also a subalgebra of the operator that acts on your system. And it splits in a complementary way. So, so you get, or if you get the of this, you will get blocks assigned that are new by new dimensional, and they will appear defined for every representation. And it's straightforward to show that if you take any state in the Gmidden, it will be a fixed point in evolution. So you can just stick your state in this expression here, and since it is in the Gmidden of interaction algebra, these guys are generated in the rational algebra, and then flip it around. This is one, so I get the third one. So my condition that the state of my system remain unchanged under the interaction of the system with the environment is equivalent to say that the state is in the community. So this decomposition, using the decomposition of your member space in this form. And it will be exactly these guys, these objects here, that are the system that is conserved. And that's the definition of a notional subsystem. And you should notice that in general, this is not a subspace of your original system. That would only be the case if this was a number, if you only got one of them. Okay, that's nice. I will now give you the general idea in words of why we thought that this should apply to quantum gravity. But then I will actually discuss an example. So I'll give you some words here, but I think it will be much clearer after our exam. So our idea was that the notional subsystems will be useful for describing the long range behavior of the system because, by construction, they are conserved. And the idea is that if you divide a quantum gravitational field into subsystems, if you have a way to do that, then those properties that are conserved under the interactions between the subsystems Ultimately, the ones that are relevant for the law and the truth and characterize the law and the geometry. So then, you would think that what that means is that the median of the interaction algebra should include the symmetries that characterize the classical space time at an appropriate level. Now, I'll have an example because, of course, there's nothing like an example in physics. And what you're doing. And this example was work we did with Ola and me. In the example, it's a very familiar one. It's actually turned out to be a very interesting one, which is the Sartre black hole in your contrary. So, thankfully, Jurek gave a talk on this just yesterday, so he's explained all the background. So, this is just a sketch of what he said. So what you have in the setup of a flat hole in your quantum gravity is a surface of a given area, which is defined from the classical theory. And this lives inside, this is a puncture surface where the punctures are where the edges of the bulk spin network arrive on your surface. So these edges are labeled by the usual spins of the spin end. So the way I want to look at this is a system and an environment, where the system is the usual state space with the invariant states of U1 transients on the puncture surface. And you haven't have seen this before, I'll have a slide in more detail on what we actually need for that in the next transparency. And the environment is the bulk state space, the usual width of opposite classes of spinets ending on the horizon. And there is a total state space for the system, which is the next product of this factor. So, in classical theory, the conditions for the surface to be in the horizon of a smart shot platform have been imposed. So, you start with a classical surface that has rotational symmetry. And that way, you obtain the state space. Now, what you have to do to complete your job is to check, go back to the low energy classical unit, and check that your state space gives rise to the classical states with a classical rotational symmetry. And the question that we're interested in is which states in here correspond to one analog of a Schwarzschild black hole. All? Some? None? So I have to say that I was interested in this because it's an example of a Mostel subsystem. But of course, it relates to important discussions that Jurek was talking about yesterday of what the entropy term should be, because you have to have the right state space to count the entropy and check what that is for the contrary. So there has been quite a lot of papers in the literature on that. Okay, so our work rests on the following idea, which seems reasonable. A classical Schwarzschild black hole has an exotropy symmetry. If there is a microscopic analog of a Schwarzschild black hole, there must be a microscopic analog, which we call G2, a quantum analog of SO3 in the dynamics that becomes SO3 in the classical limit. It's really important that it is in the dynamics. In fact, if you try to force this on the states, you won't actually get the results. So this. But what I described before, we correspond to a non-trivial commutant of the interaction algebra that will identify the quantum Schwarzschild black hole as a Mostel subsystem. That is, the symmetries of the interaction dynamics should exist in the commutant, should be part of the commutant. And here's where this gets tricky, that we do not know the dynamics, and we do not know the actual interaction algebra. But it is possible to restrict sufficiently to find the Mostel subsystem that corresponds to the quantum analog of rotation. So in the next few pages, I'm going to be building up the Microsoft catalog of relationships. So the very first thing is your states are basically described features on the surface. It's the discrete system. We expect this to be the discrete system. Now the evolution, the AK are the interaction operators that tell you how the system interacts with the environment. By definition, acts simultaneously both on the people space of the black hole horizon and the ball, and should also add ball. So here I have a simple composition with slightly more information that we need to know for our derivation. So in fact, the setup is that in the ball space, your spin edges are labeled by the usual spins J. But on the horizon, the labels are integers M that range from minus J to plus J in integer steps, according to this condition. And you also have the level of the Chern-Simons theory on this, is this function of the area of the surface constructed by the J's, that corresponds to the set of J's. So based on that, that's really what we have. And from this basic statement here, you find a sufficient set of generators for the interaction algebra. It's given by, that's all we can actually do on this system. It's either add or remove functions, or break them. So there's a non-trivial result if you take one puncture and you move it around the first one. If you do this, then first of all you change the ball state and you pick up a phrase. And this is the panel algebra that has been discussed by John Lyons. But now, since I want the Microsoft analog of rotations to keep the area the same, that is, it should go from the state space of black holes for a given area to the same thing. That means that adding and removing functions is not allowed because of the change of the area. So my interaction algebra can be generated by a rotation. And I'm not the following. If I give you two edges with the same state, they can have different values of them. If I break that, I pick up a phase, and then I can permute the ends. Now this is the same to permuting the experts and then braiding, the reason being that the phase just depends on the sum of the values of the ends. So I'm allowed to permute. Hence, for same J, permute after braiding is the same as braiding after permuting. So the commutant should be generated by permutations of the punctures that have the same J's. And my group, my symmetry that I'm looking for, should be inside this. I have only one more thing to do. So that's the isotope is transitive. And I will ask that its Microsoft analog is also transitive. So for every two punctures, I should have an element of G2 that connects it to. It's now clear that can only happen if all speeds are the same. That is, the permutation should be among all the punctures of the surface. So now what do I have? I have that the noiseless subsystem corresponding to my microscopic analog of rotations is the state space of the black hole in Newtonian gravity restricted all J's being the same. And for purposes of the entropy calculation is straightforward once you're here to show that the minimum spin dominates. I'm not going to discuss this part. So what do you have? So the state space, the quantum Schwarzschild black hole, is then the nodular subsystem corresponding to the G2 symmetries of the dynamics. And it's interesting, but I'm also not going to discuss, the cosmic normal nodes must be excited states inside that state space. Now, what are the lessons from that? Well, so Alexa, yesterday was discussing Kalman versus dynamical structures of law and of states. And he was saying that dynamics is so complicated that they're actually whole, because getting his fingers crossed, you won't have to think about it. So I have good news and bad news. And the bad news is the dynamics essential. In particular, if you did not use the interaction algebra and the gradients, and you just wanted symmetries on the states, then you would get the result of Urey was mentioned, which is you just get two states, you want the same ends. So the symmetries have to be in the dynamics, that's different. Now, this is a big statement here, that our construction is similar in theory to what happens in uniform gravity, where the classical observables distinguish the different kinds of black holes. Except that in our version, the construction is quantum, is a quantum level. Now, the good news for Alex is that it's actually not so bad, the similar symmetries. You don't actually need to know everything about the symmetry, of course. It's a long and big limit, and you just need to know what's important for it. And the only things you need is the interaction dynamics, and from that, you only need the symmetries of it. So, the moral is dynamics is essential, but you have to pick the right parts. Now, another thing to say here is related to this statement here. The interaction algebra depends on the energy level, the approximation of the observables you're interested in. Now, conversely, and that was why I was initially interested in this, if you are engaged in one model building and want to construct a spin pong that you think has a hope of having the correct energy dynamics, you might want to use the low energy symmetries to constrain the one Microsoft dynamics. I'm not going to make this more precise for now, I have one more comment for that for you. So my next slide is comments on this construction, and then we'll say more about this is just to make it fun and ask you questions. So my initial motivation was looking for a background independent theory. And I'm underutilizing most of the subsystem as a way to do that. So the question is, how background independent is this method? I have here a quote of John Spatcher. He was here a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying how now with centennial of Einstein's theory of relativity. He's reading a lot of books, and one of the things he has explained is background independence. And I asked him, what does he mean by that? And he said, background independence means that there is no dynamics independent kinematics, which I think is a very good definition, not to try to keep in mind if you are interested, especially in biology. So, the notion of subsystem method is background independent in the sense that it does not rely on a particular graph or state. There is a genuine superposition of spin poles or states inside the boundary, and is defined by the dynamics. And of course, although this is not really, I can say that you are it works with different models in various states of quantum gravity, although that does not ensure being background independent. But what we did is we started with a surface, a classical one. It was the classical condition that have the conditions for this to be a black hole surface, and in that we look for a subsystem inside that. So this method, if you give it a subsystem, you can find something inside. So if you give me a string form, there is a string. Some of it, I put a boundary, one way or another. Inside there, there can be propagating bubbles, depending on whether there are symmetries in your dynamics. And you can get this out from a general superposition of what's inside, but the boundary has to be given. So it needs the boundary on interaction dynamics. But this, of course, there's a many interesting questions to ask. One here to the lab. And even beyond that, I would mention something more about that. So low energy, use of freedom, multiple subsystems, and locality. I have a lot to say about this, but I don't have a lot of time, so I'm going to try to illustrate a couple of forms here briefly. This is microscopic versus macroscopic design. So, one, for example, in twin forms, you take a twin form complex and you look at the syntax of it and you assign your numerical properties. Or in causal sets, you look at some edges, arrows in your causal set, and you say that this is good for that, and so on. One can assign geometric, local, or causal properties in the subforms or subgraphs, but one of them is not a nice state of the dynamics. So we actually have to take into account the quantum sum of the geometries. So it's actually dangerous to take this assignment too seriously. Ultimately, the causal or local or geometric properties of your theory should be in this position. Now, the local subsystem has some interesting comments to make on locality. So, a classic example, a very simple example of a local subsystem in the literature consists of this. So, you have a system which is a tensor product of two dimensional state spaces, and it interacts with an environment. But this interaction has a commutation symmetry between the three two-state systems. And because of this symmetry, if you follow the same procedure that we that I outlined in the definition of the state system, you find that there is a conserved degree of freedom here, which gives you a two-dimensional state space. But it is none of these three original ones to start with. That is, if you have something like this, and you want to extract some piece of space-time, chances are it's none of the particular ones you're looking at. I'm going to be brief here. So that suggests that the whole exercise of trying to assign or extract geometry from a spin-form model or from weak or semi-classical states should really go as following. It should give the boundary of interaction dynamics. It should look at the proper symmetries and extract the noise of the subsystems. And then assign the locality geometric causal properties, whatever you want, to those. Not the underlying building blocks that you use in your field. And this is a brief list of some things one might want to do next, and clarifying how the things were said before. So in the particular example of the black hole case, it has turned out actually to be one that raises a lot of interesting questions. So in particular, one of the molecular excitations to the state space that one found as a natural subsystem that corresponds classically to quasi-normal modes. Another thing that you can look at is a rotating black hole. It would mean a different symmetry than Newton. You can actually, interestingly, you can use the same idea to define black holes in spin forms or other models. So this is a question that has been around for a very long time. If I give you a simple, a closed set, whatever it is that you're doing, work is a black hole. So you have the conditions that one deposits, say classically, look on the boundary to get a transparent state space out. And you can imagine using these conditions, again, to derive this time the actual surface as part of the gravity theory of the boundary. And get the black hole in the first place. And now, so there's some more work that one can do following our work to get exactly how SO3 is the classical unit of these filters that we use. Now, in general, of course, there's plenty of things that you can try propagating modes in quantum gravity with boundary. Another thing is to define beams in a dynamical way now from translation symmetry in your interaction algebra. Now, given this comment is about needing a boundary, the boundary doesn't have to be a wall somewhere. For example, you could imagine having the environment as small-scale fluctuations, Planckian interaction, and the system as a coarse-grained beam. And the boundary, the interaction algebra, being generated by how these affect the system. And also, I should say that the theory of closed subsystem is there in the literature, but it's very new, and there are things that we would like to have that, to make it exactly appropriate to what we need here. For example, in the way that it's discussed in the literature, the symmetries are exact. And here, and we've already done this particular example. We did an optional constant or emerging optional system. I should also say that there is work in the quantum information community that would relate the Nostra subsystems to standard methods or get into the laboratory of theories as you do in statistical physics. It's interesting to look at streams that we would care about a lot, such as quantum current. But overall, what I want to say is that, in fact, if you do that's what I want to communicate to you, that you do need dynamics, but you can actually do things. And I also think that they make sense. Thank you.
First of all, let me say how pleased I am to find some of this. The information theory and the modal subsystems depend on having a concept of time, so it's only a concept of time. And it probably doesn't make any difference to begin with, because you're dealing with static space time in the case of the structures. You sort of have a concept of time in that sense. But I wonder whether you think on one hand, quantum information theory can develop sort of special optimistic version where you can get different consequences, and whether that would be necessary to carry what you've done to non-static space in this space.
So I don't think the issue is with special relativity. The issue is with you need a real Newtonian. I do not know how to do these things with a constraint. So that is what the boundary really needs to do. It needs to give you a natural Newtonian. Beyond that, when you do need basically be in the ballpark of normal dynamics.
I would like to make a just a remark about the statement problems in loop quantum gravity. So our states, which are physical, they solve nuclear organism constraints. So by definition, they are already symmetric, not only with respect to the nuclear organism like locations or but they are symmetric with respect to invariant with respect to all the nuclear models. So this is a very interesting problem, how given a state, how to define some symmetry related to nuclear models, where we already divided by the reaction of all the nuclear models. So I understand that one of the issues which you discuss in your talk, and that is some idea, how to, some general idea to define this cinema. From my point of view, in case of black hole here in particular, what we, our understanding is that symmetry is related to multiple moments. So something is symmetric if all the multiple moments vanish. So all we have to do, we have to find quantum operators which correspond to all the multiple moments, and then we know how to check if something is symmetric or not. It's true that in the case of this theory, we don't have those operators, because in this paper we have first class of keys, two bigger moments, and then we don't worry about this anymore. So there is some gap. However, so the bottom line is that you cannot just naively act this sphere and those functions and arcs in the rotation group and think that these are rotations of the black hole, because those rotations are really divided by all those rotations. So we are now rotating something else, we are rotating some labels. We have special rotations. So we need some other notion. But I understand that you also are not rotating speech. So there are two notions. You have some idea. So I don't understand that you have some idea if you didn't implement.
So, the point I have to make is that we are also including the moments in many states. So it doesn't seem to be the case that rotations disappear other than regular, that they disappear because we dealt with different moments at the classical level. When you can talk about this further, your construction is actually quite different than us in a number of ways. You do get a different result than we do. You should probably find out that has to be, but assume that we're coming up with a theory in one of the right. But it's not, we were discussing this thing before. There is no mistake, so there is several things to be said here. I'm not so sure if you need to answer so quickly. So you do put constraints at the level of what operations you can make on your surface, and different ones would give you a partial black hole or a rotating black hole and so on, right? And what
if your motions are applied at the quantum level? So the states are, so there's kinematical physical states in which your motions are, and then we construct quantum solutions which are.